Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
The chastity belt, along with knights in shining armour and damsels in distress, is a staple of medieval history. But did it really exist? Hello, I'm Rachel Kahn, and on the Ark this week, here on ABC Radio National, a titillating tale from the scholarly pursuits of Albrecht Classen from the University of Arizona. He specializes in medieval and Renaissance sex, which includes quite a few bawdy tales about chastity belts. The trouble is, historians have taken them as true indications of what the medievals were getting up to. But Classen, who's been invited to address the Center for Medieval Studies at the University of Sydney, has his doubts.
I am very concerned about what we know about the past and what modern people think about the past. And it very quickly proved to be that the chastity belt is one of those objects people have all kinds of ideas about, and it's sort of the undercurrent of popular culture. And so I thought I need to deconstruct that.
Well, I note that there are 8,686,000 hits on Google for chastity belt. That shows an alarming interest in this very strange object.
Well, because it's still today a very popular object in certain circles. And I think that's SMM and whatever you have. I don't know. And I didn't want to investigate that. I wanted really just to know how today, what we understand about that object, because we associate that past world really very, very much with that odd-looking object.
Well, for those who have been lucky enough to be in certain museums in Europe, they would have seen examples of the chastity belt on display.
Right. You do have a lot of castles where they like to show these objects, just as much as they like to show torture instruments. That is really a wonderful thing, to ghoulish things, horrible things. But for example, the chastity belt in the British Museum can no longer be seen. They have removed it because they have found out it is not authentic. And in many castles and museums, these things suddenly very quickly disappear. I hope also as part of my book, on my research, because I deconstruct that myth.
If they're not authentic, what were they doing there?
We know today that, particularly in the late 19th century, British industrialists had figured out this was a great way of making money, because there were lots of interest in the Middle Ages, lots of museums were open, and they needed objects. And they just couldn't attract the audience with ordinary-looking things from everyday life, furniture or clothing. They needed something exciting. And as much as there was a certain tradition, indeed, going back to the Middle Ages, and we can talk more about that later, but in the 19th century, they wanted to stuff their museums with exciting objects.
So what do we make then of, say, the paintings and the etchings, where we see these women, sometimes naked, with these strange chastity belts around them, holding the lock, someone else holding the key? Where did those images come from? Yeah.
So first of all, you observed there are indeed a lot of images, both from the Middle Ages as well as the Renaissance and the Baroque and so forth. So that's clear. We do indeed have some pictorial images. But there's a certain motive, and we associate that. Today, we believe that this is a scene normally of a prostitute who protects her body from her lover. So the lover has to pay. Or the customer, I should say. And we can clearly prove this by the hand gestures. So she takes the money, hands it over to the purse of her pimp, and then she hands over the key to him, and so then they can go to their business. So that's a very typical mercantile motive. So we can prove that this happened throughout the centuries and has been picked up very much by the 19th century artists.
What about the literature about the knights, for example, who went off to fight the Moors and made sure that their wives or their women were padlocked so no one could get to them, or perhaps they couldn't get up to hanky-panky when they were gone?
But see, the best, very, very best response I've heard is of a knight who does that too, but he's very worried that he might die on the crusade. So he might not come back, and he then entrusts the key to the chastity belt to his friend and says, look, in case I'm not coming back, you know what to do. So he leaves the castle, and a mile later, his friend comes gasping after him and arises and says, you gave me the wrong key. But anyway, to be serious, the whole concept was, allegedly at least, that the knight was trying to protect his wife from unwelcome sexual activities while he was gone. This is a notion that only later satirists projected on situations in the past. We have no evidence whatsoever from the whole time of the Crusades.
Now, there is a sort of literary tradition in which perhaps the image of the lock and the key could be seen as metaphorical, the woman saying she is the lock and to the man, she's saying, you have the key.
That's right.
I guess a lot of people would have read this as evidence of the chastity belt.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good question. We have a lot of symbolic expressions of lock and key. Your love is locked in my heart, and only you have the key to that. That is the symbolism that always comes from lock and key, of course. But this is a shortcut then, quickly going from symbolic images of love and loyalty to suddenly sexual control, manipulation, and domination by the husband. So this is a totally different aspect, and these two discourses have been blended and merged in the course of time.
So are you saying that the chastity belt is as mythical as the unicorn?
No, not quite. I would have to be much more serious, because we do have concrete evidence of medieval manuscripts, late medieval. The first one is a drawing from 1405, yet we know that this was a satirical drawing. So within a context of siege machinery and all kinds of weapons used to besiege a city, then suddenly the artist created also an image of a chastity belt. But in a very special context where we know clearly from other images as well that this is satire.
But the idea of actually altering a woman's body to prevent intercourse, for example, was well practiced throughout the Arabic world and in Africa, whether it was female circumcision or whether it was the insertion of objects or sewing up or cutting away the labia. All of those things were practiced. So, you know, the chastity belt seems mild by comparison.
That's true. But I think the interesting parallel here is that we do have a number of scholars, very famous scholars around 1900. And they were anthropologists, ethnologists, people who were very interested in the history of woman. They published books like The Woman and tried to deal with all kinds of anthropological evidence. And since the world of Pacific, Australia, Africa, wherever, was primitive and poor women were suffering from all those horrible things you just have mentioned, and I think they're still practiced to some extent today. Circumcision for women, awful. So then they drew very odd analogies from this allegedly quote-unquote primitive world, hence the medieval world also must have been primitive. And then they picked up certain references to the chastity belt, as they had heard somehow, misunderstanding entirely satirical reports, and took them as really very, very serious reports in order to confirm that the past in Europe was also very primitive.
What would be a type of evidence that you would take very seriously? For example, are there women who wrote about the absurdity of wearing this chastity belt?
We have no chronicle account, neither a man nor a woman. We have no serious writing, no romance, no text whatsoever where any poet from the entire Middle Ages far into the 15th and 16th century would talk about it. If they talk about it, and there are indeed a couple of examples, particularly in the Italian world, and then it's always very clearly satirical. There's actually one case by an Italian writer where a wife dies basically from the chastity belt, when the second wife then is supposed to get the chastity belt on, she knows already that this is dangerous. And she uses a strategy to lure her husband out to the balcony and then pushes him into the canal, where he then drowns with the chastity belt still in his hand. And so she can run away with her lover.
I suppose we should say at this point that the chastity belt is always made of metal, some kind of metal?
What we have today, what we can say, and this is all very, very difficult because we cannot date metal very well, or hardly possible. But there's all kinds of things with leather to avoid chafing, steel. See, in very practical terms, it is biologically, medically impossible. A woman would not be able to survive that, just simply from the point of view of hygiene. So what then these artists, the metal artists, tried to do was to create some kind of artificial imaginary chastity belt. And so we have indeed hundreds of them still probably in all kinds of archives and museums, but they were products in order to verify what they just had heard about.
Albrecht, you said something very interesting, which is that we can't really date metal. So how can we be sure that these items were not authentic?
We know recently, I just have heard from some scholars very, very recently, they could identify certain marks on metal parts which date directly from about 1880, 1890. So that is then a very clear indication that those museum pieces, they look really very splendid until today, nicely polished, that these were really made in the 19th century. Otherwise, we don't really have any evidence from the Middle Ages. I mean, in general, if you will, you must say that the chastity belt was never even created in the Middle Ages. If at all, then they were created in the post-medieval world, Renaissance, Baroque, and so forth.
What about Christian sources that might have acted as an inspiration for making a chastity belt? Paul's letter to the Ephesians.
Yeah, that's right. You do have, of course, the struggle among the church fathers and the early Christians, the struggle against the body, particularly against the sexuality. So they used quite extensively references to the belt, putting on the chastity belt. I mean, the belt of chastity to chastise their own body. So there's a certain element of discussion among early Christian writers, referring to the need to control the body. Certainly, that is always there.
Well, so often people read those metaphorical expressions, warning expressions, as literal. So it wouldn't surprise me that someone decided to come up with a chastity belt.
That's right. And particularly combining that with the whole notion of marriage, disloyalty, adultery. It never refers to a lover. It always refers, in a concrete sense, to an older husband. Keep that in mind. It's always the impotent husband who is afraid that he cannot hold on to his wife. And then comes in the other really interesting aspect, the notion that women are sexually cannot be satisfied.
Ravenous.
Ravenous, nymphomatic women, lustful with an endless libido, and the poor old husband cannot control that. That's where it comes from. What you refer to is the control of sexuality per se. That is what the church fathers talked about.
One thing about feminist scholarship, and I wonder how much the interest in the chastity belt might have served feminist scholarship.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Because I was curious in my research how much my colleagues might have critically viewed that. What I really observe over and over again was that during the 80s, 90s, even until the recent past, really, anyone who wanted to show how feminist they were and fighting for women's liberation only needed to draw on the chastity belt and say fleetingly all this off of chastity belt and making it to a symbol of women's fight for liberation.
Yes, in the bad old days of patriarchy.
Yes, fully understandable, and I support that very, very much. But unfortunately, that was the wrong object. They thereby normally fell prey to a myth.
Well, given the continuing interest in this myth, what's been the reaction to your study, which shows that this has been more or less untrue?
Yeah, well, I got very, very good reviews. Very, very recently, just last week, I got a review by a young scholar who I'm really happy to say, she said, Now, there are a number of certain books we in women's studies always need to have on our bookshelf, and this is the next one. So I felt really very, very happy that she said that.
Albert Klassen has written several works on love and sex, including The Medieval Chastity Belt, which he spoke about to the Centre for Medieval Studies at the University of Sydney. Next week, the remarkable collection of Arundel prints that will be on show next week in a Melbourne church. That's On the Ark with me, Rachel Kahn. And tonight, the Spirit of Things travels to Texas to learn how God is the good you do. That's after the news at 6.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.